How's it going, everybody? This is me again, Chewy, one of the hosts of the podcast titled Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends. And I am once again joined by my girlfriend, Monica.
Hi, guys.
So Monica has a chip on her shoulder right now.
I have a what?
A chip on your shoulder.
A chip? Is that the proposition? Yes. Something in California? All right, so apparently you're causing cancer, guys, in California. So we were just talking about how, you know, we're going to die no matter what, right? But I have a higher chance of dying in this state, and Chewy might have to find a new podcast host at some point. If California, you know, like, gets his, like, deadly grip on me. But we'll be fine. We all know this, that all processed foods have some sort of, like, chemicals in them that cause cancer. So whatever. We're all going to die. It's fine. I'm okay with that. You know, I hope it's coffee that kills me or, like, you know, something cool, but whatever.
And, well, this conversation before we started recording came to be because, I mean, we always kind of, like, socialize a little bit before we record stuff. But it came to light because I was making fun of something, and then it came out that I realized, I mean, everything has a... Oh, like, because of work. My job, we get boxes from all over the world for merchandise to sell. And every box that we get has a California cancer warning. So everything.
Of course.
Like, yeah, so it's inescapable, man. It's just everywhere by now.
Everything in California causes cancer.
And I, for the record, would not want to have to find another co-host, my friend, so.
Well, let's hope I don't die. But, you know...
Yeah,
the world is unpredictable, so you never know what's gonna happen. So
yeah, and this whole talk about, you know, this rainbow talk about death and everything has to do with our topic today. But we'll get back to that in a minute. In the meantime, my friend, let's go ahead and remind our listeners of our social media accounts. We have our Facebook under Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends, and we have our Instagram under Myths Behind LGDS.
Our Twitter is MythsBehindLGDS, and you can also email us at MythsBehindLegends@gmail.com.
Awesome. And our Letterboxd, which is kind of like a movie blog review thing, where you can share your reviews on movies you like, you didn't like, make lists about your favorite movies, movies with a certain actor that's your favorite actor or whatever. You can make all kinds of lists, reviews, share them with people that follow you, etc. And we have a watch list under, in which you can choose one of the movies that we have in there, or maybe recommend one to be added to that. And in there, we're also under Myths Behind LGDS and The Moment of Truth. Our website URL, Monica's already doing her little dance there.
Oh yeah, I'm already dancing. It's awesome.
So the URL for said website is under myths-behind-legends.mailchimpsites.com. I like your hand motions.
Thank you. We need to make this a song, and then, like, I'll do the little hand motions as a dance.
We need to incorporate video in this urgently.
Yes, we do.
Like, we had to do this yesterday, Monica.
I know. I'm working on it.
The video situation, but I mean, I need to find the webcam too, because the one that I have on my computer is like half a megapixel, so I see you like in an NES game, you look all like,
what, really
pixelated? No, not really, but I can tell your features apart. I can see where your eyes are, I can see where your lips are, I mean, I can see everything on that little window, but I wish the resolution was better. But anyways, I don't know how you see me.
I mean, I see you fine. Like, you're a little blurred, but it's not that bad.
It's my camera, dude. Like, my camera sucks. I mean, this computer is about 6 years old already, so I need to find a new webcam or a new computer.
So if anybody wants to send us some new equipment, you know, it's up to your discretion, but, you know,
donate
whatever.
To our Patreon fund. That's
right.
actually, we don't have a Patreon, guys. So not yet, at least. So hopefully it's
just send us credits through Gmail or whatever. I don't know how that works, but you guys can figure it out.
Gift cards accepted.
Exactly.
So speaking of death, what is the topic for today's episode, my friend?
Today we're doing the blob. It's like the most dangerous jello you've ever encountered.
So the jello eats you this time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So if you had to do like a small summary, emphasis on small, please,
Okay.
Because you always tend to
I do a little too much sometimes, but let's okay. So for this, let's just say the blob. The blob was basically the little toy that people have, you know, that like you can like play with. It's like Play-Doh, but like jelly. This thing, you know, arrives on Earth, grows, and starts eating people left and right. And it comes down to two people to defeat it, basically. That's the
Nice.
entire.
Yeah, and by the way, we're talking about the 80s version of the Blob. I think it's a remake. I don't think it's a sequel.
No, it's a remake.
Yeah, so we shall be speaking more in detail of that movie after these messages in our critique segment. We'll be right back, guys.
What's up, dudes? I'm Jerry D of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, books, fashion, and fads.
If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, he's got it covered. Wait, is there a lot of things to talk about for the 80s and Christmas?
Well, you got the movie giants like Christmas Vacation, Scrooged, and A Christmas Story. There are TV specials like Muppet Family Christmas, Claymation Christmas Celebration, and a Garfield Christmas Special.
Plus classics shown every year.
You also jam out to Last Christmas, Do They Know It's Christmas, and Christmas in Hollis. But most of all, it was a time for the most bodacious, best-selling Christmas toys ever, like He-Man, G.I. Joe, Transformers,
and Cabbage Patch Kids.
Yes, them too. We cover them all, plus much more, including standard segments like Hap Hap Happiest Memory, Gag Me with the Spoon, The Other Half of the Battle,
and Chant with the Littles.
So tune in to Totally Rad Christmas everywhere you get your podcasts. Turn the clock back and dive into those warm and fuzzy memories.
Later, dudes.
All right, everybody, we are back with our critique segment, and in this part of the podcast episode, if you are a first-time listener, what we do is we kind of just talk about the movie itself, like the quality of the movie as far as the way it was shot, the sound design, costumes, etc. And for this one, dude, I don't think this movie is going to win any awards for cinematography or story or anything like that. I just picked this movie. Full disclaimer, this was my pick again. Because
yeah.
It's one of my favorite movies, dude. As one, the first time that I saw it, I think I might have mentioned this to you already, I was scared out of my mind. I saw it when I was about 10 years old, like around the early 90s, like 93, 94, so I was about 9 or 10, the first time I saw it. The movie came out in 88,
Yeah.
and like I'm telling you, like the first time that I saw it, it was broad daylight. Like, I remember it was a Sunday afternoon because we were at my grandma's house, and we would typically visit my grandma on Sundays. And I saw this movie, and I was like, what the hell, dude? Like, what am I watching? Like, this is terrifying. And it's just your typical 80s movie, like schlock movie. It's got all the 80s tropes, like all the 80s-ness. But yeah, I mean, that's why it eventually became one of my favorites. And it's still, to me, kind of like unnerving the way the special effects are. But
Yeah.
you had never seen this movie, right?
I had actually, I saw it. So I don't know what episode we did that we watched Gremlins. And then I went on like a f***ing like horror movie trip where I watched a bunch of movies from the 80s, and this was one of the ones that I watched. And I had already seen it, but I hadn't seen it in a long time. It had been a while. I think it's been a year since we like did the Gremlins. So now that I watched it again, like I mean, I remembered parts of it, but like it is really 80s. It's super 80s. And the effects, honestly, they're not that bad for the time period that this movie was filmed at. The blob is literally like Play-Doh, right? Like that's what it is, like translucent Play-Doh. It's cool though, like the idea and everything. Like it's a very interesting movie, and like it is scary, dude. Like being chased by like something that literally turns your bones into like acid. Like it's acid. That's basically what it is, you know? Like it is scary. But like yeah, it was pretty cool. I really liked it.
I gotta make a distinction between the special effects because there are the practical effects of the blob when it eats people. That looks pretty legit, even to this day. I think, you know, it's about 20 years old, whatever. The green screen effects, which are the ones when the people are being chased by the blob, it gets superimposed with this green screen and it looks like really, really fake, dude. It just looks so fake when there's certain scenes, like, you know, like I said, when they're being chased by the blob and it's trailing after them and they're like running in front of it, and you can tell it's like a green screen, like right away.
Yeah.
That looks really cheap and poorly done, but I mean, again, it's like a 25-year-old movie or whatever, so. Wait, no, 35, right? Yeah, 35.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be 88, yeah.
So about 33 years old. Wow, I'm trying to make myself look younger here. Than I am. And, of course, I can't talk about this movie without talking about that mullet, though.
The what?
The mullet. That mullet.
The mullet.
The hair on the guy, on Brian.
On the guy with the motorcycle, the yeah. Bad boy guy? Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, dude, honestly, dude, I forgot that this guy was in that movie. And, like, that guy was the one that was on Entourage, right?
Uh-huh. Yep.
That one show. Like, I never really watched it, but I remember that guy. He looks so freaking different in this show. I mean, in this movie compared to, like, what he looks like now and, like, in real life. And it's, like, crazy. They don't put any, like, context. It's just, like, this dude riding a motorcycle, like, trying to go over a freaking bridge that's broken.
Oh, yeah.
Who the fuck is this guy? You know, like, some dude that lives in the outskirts of town or what? And then, like, he shows up in town, and he's just, like, hiding from the cops. And it's like, okay, well, obviously this guy has a bad rap or something, because he's like, why is he hiding from the cop? And he's just your typical town bad boy, I guess. But, like, the hair, though. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what he put in his hair, but, I mean, it looked good. Those curls, you don't just get them from, like, waking up, you know, out of bed, like, straight up, like, those were nice.
Well, I need to burst both of our bubbles here because, I mean, yeah, the hair is pretty legit. But, and by the way, the actor is Kevin Dillon, the name of the actor.
Yeah.
He happens to be the brother of Matt Dillon, I believe, the more popular of the two. He came out in movies like, I mean, I can think of, there's something about Mary, he was in that movie. He was also in The Outsiders, like, a long time ago.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's the brother of this guy, I think. Or I'm pretty sure they're brothers, but they might be cousins. They're related somehow.
Now that you say it, they do look similar. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, well, his hair and the girl character played by Shawnee Smith, I forgot her name, Meg, I think? Or
yeah.
Like, who, yeah. By the way, I thought was Babe when I was a little kid, of course.
You know, of always, course you did. Yeah.
She's so pretty, dude. I mean, like, well, I thought, I mean, now it's a little weird for me to say that she's pretty because she's, like, 18 in the movie, whatever, but I mean, when I was a little kid, I liked her a lot. She's, I mean, I think she's a good actress. Shawnee Smith has been in other movies and shows that I liked. Mm-hmm. But both of their hair incidentally happens to be fake.
Wow. Of course it is. Like,
it's hair extensions, my friend.
Oh my god. Wow. I was very deceived. It looked real.
I can't ever watch this movie, like, in the same light again because my bubble was burst.
Not real hair, it's fake. It's, yeah, all fake.
Mm-hmm. And the acting, like I mentioned a little earlier, it's not the best. I mean, it's just, you're not gonna watch this movie for, like, good performances. It's just a popcorn flick.
Yeah. This is what you, like, put on and just, like, kind of chill, sit back, eat some snacks, and make fun of it, really, because, like, I mean, it was made so, like, long ago. So if you're gonna straight up watch this in 2021, that's the year we're in, right? 2021?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you're going to straight up watch this in 2021, it's because you're going to, like, either make fun of the movie or you're just, like, doing research like us. Like, we're watching it for purpose.
For academic purposes, of course.
For academic purposes, yes.
Well, yeah, dude, it's not a great movie, and I'll talk about that more when I get the score for this. Okay. I mean, I like it. I like the movie. It's one of my personal favorites. But given, you know, giving it more merit than it deserves, I mean, I can't do that either, as far as speaking objectively. But some of the scenes that stood out is when the first guy gets eaten, the date, the boyfriend character, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When he's, like, stretching his arms out, and she takes the arm, and she pulls it out of the blob, and she just has the arm.
Oh,
there.
Yeah.
That's a pretty legit scene. And also, the other one where the lady's in the phone booth.
Dude, that was intense. It just, like, literally bursts, and the whole thing just swallows her, and it's like, whoa, dude, that's intense. Yeah. I think that was my favorite one, my favorite scene of the entire movie. That was pretty cool.
That one, I mean, there's a couple other ones. Actually, when she's there in the phone booth, she sees, like, her boyfriend cop, whatever, is already being eaten by the blob.
Yeah.
So that was pretty creepy, like, the way his face is kind of, like, all deformed and everything.
Yeah.
And the other one, oh, when the guy gets sucked down the drain.
That was, okay, I mean, me watching this today, I was just like, how the hell did he fit down that tiny drain? Like, it makes no sense. Like, it was physically impossible for that to happen. Yeah. But, I mean, it was pretty cool. Like, it really was cool.
Yeah, I think those were my top three, because there are a few more deaths, of course, but I think those were my top three in the whole movie. And I don't know if you realize, but of course, I mean, there's an 80s rock soundtrack in this.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, the musical score is cool and everything, but there's a music number uh-huh. at the end credits, which I thought was pretty cool, so I looked more into who did this. And it turns out that the song that plays at the end credits, and I've been doing this ever since Marvel movies.
Okay.
I will never watch the end credits of a movie because, I mean, I figured out it's done. And of course, most of these movies don't have any, like, after credit scene because it's before it was cool.
Yeah.
But I started watching these ever since the Marvel movies because I figured, well, maybe I'll notice something that I hadn't noticed before or something cool, right? And, well, in this case, the song, it's a song called Brave New Love.
Okay.
And the band is called Alien.
Okay.
I thought it was a pretty cool song. I mean, it's, like, awesome.
I've never heard of that band.
No, me either. I think they're just, like, we're, like, a local band that were friends with somebody in the production.
Yeah, they were like, oh, we'll put credits. Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, I want to get the soundtrack for this movie. I'll buy it or something.
Nice.
And the other thing that I mentioned in the credits, this is a little bit of trivia, I guess. I don't know what I was doing or why this stood out to me so much or why I happened to catch it. There was a person, and I wish I had their name here because I didn't write it down, whose job in the movie, you know how there's makeup artists and there's like caterers and then they list all those people, right? They listed this guy's job as being the blob wrangler.
What?
So what does that mean? Is there like a real blob that...
He handled the blob? Like what?
So what I'm wondering is, I mean, of course, this being practical effects, there's probably people pulling strings and mm-hmm. I don't know, something like that. So was he the only one that was doing this, or did he actually have a pet blob somewhere?
Like the priest at the end, dude? Oh, like, yeah. Who keeps, like, a piece of alien material that almost killed his entire town and is like, oh, yeah, this is gonna, like, release, like...
Oh, Armageddon?
The Armageddon, yeah, and, like, we're all going to have to repent or whatever. Like, what the fuck? Like, why, dude? Like, you just defeated it, and you're gonna release it out into the world when the time is right? Like, come on, man. Like, what's up with that?
I think yeah, he went insane. Crazy. He went insane when he saw it, what he did, or what the blob did.
Yeah.
I think the first time that he saw it, he was walking in the street, and then he followed it, and then he saw it going down the sewers or something.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And then at the very end, he sees it when it's the blob is, like, attacking the entire town, the people, all in
and it's enormous. In the streets. Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of just loses his mind, and he decides to keep one of the pieces. Actually, they used, I don't know what kind of mineral it was, but they used, like, an actual mineral, like a crystal.
Oh, really?
When the blob is frozen and it blows up.
Yeah.
You know how it looks like a little crystal, like diamonds, little crystal? Whatever?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's an actual mineral that they use, and it might have been quartz, something like that, something mundane.
Yeah. But
they used it, like, to show the blob as it's frozen, whatever, in its frozen right. state. Uh-huh. I thought that was pretty cool, too.
It was pretty. It was pretty. Like, if I were there, I would have kept some of it, but, like, maybe not, because it's like, dude, like, this thing almost killed the entire town. Like, get rid of it. Kill it in any way possible, but right, that priest is a little whack for real.
You'd be able to make some nice blob earrings.
That would murder me. No, thank you. I think I'm good. I'll pass.
The thing that I like about this movie is that none of the characters are safe.
No. Uh-huh.
You see the blob eating the character that you would think is going to be one of the main characters, the boyfriend, right in the beginning.
Yeah, uh-huh.
The blob also eats the cop, the you know, the sheriff.
Uh-huh.
Also, like, around maybe, like, the middle of the movie, like, or close to the middle, like, so fairly early on. And then, of course, it attacks the town people and everything, and... Oh, it also eats a little kid at some point.
The little kid? What little kid?
Yeah, the you know the girl? She has a brother that she rescues in one scene in the sewers, whatever.
Yeah.
And there's a little kid walking, like, his best friend, whatever, and he gets eaten by the blob in the sewers.
He dies?
Yeah, dude.
I don't remember seeing that. Wow. I remember watching it, and I'm like, what happened to that kid? Like, I didn't see him again after a while, and I guess he died.
This happened when you went to get your snacks from the fridge.
Apparently. Yeah, that must have been it. Wow.
And then, of course, people in the town make the very smart decision of locking themselves in the city hall when this thing's around them.
Right. Like, that's going to do anything. This thing is, like, hella powerful. Obviously, it can... It has busted through a manhole, like, in the sewer system. What makes them think that a couple pieces of wood are going to keep this thing away from them? Like, come on, dude. And then they're out there like, oh, let's use, like, the fire extinguisher because it hates the cold. Like, but how many fire extinguishers do you even have? Like, not enough to fight a f***ing giant-ass blob. Like, come on. Like, come on. No.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I guess it shows how a lot of people would react in a time of crisis. And you think about it, and it's like... That's just a stupid decision. I wouldn't do that. But you never know, dude, when you're scared and running for your life. I mean,
yeah. I mean, your first instinct would be to, like, hide in your house somewhere or, like, you know, dig a hole somewhere and just, like, stay there. And you don't know, obviously, what this thing is. So you're going to think, like, oh, if I just hide in a building, I'll be fine. But no, like, because obviously you got into the movie theater,
mm-hmm.
the AC unit vents. So... I mean, honestly, I'm surprised they all survived. There hadn't been for that, like, guy that everyone in the town hated. Because he saved their lives after they were all like, he's a degenerate. He's, like, a bad boy. He's bad news or whatever. Like, and he didn't do anything except stand up for himself. Literally, that was his only flaw. Like, they blamed him for everything. And he was the one who ended up saving the town, obviously, because that's the way movie works. But, if it hadn't been for that kid... who, by luck, had a freaking snow-making truck in the garage that he worked at with his friend, then they would all be screwed.
Because
that's what killed it. And, like, it didn't even make any sense, like, because it stopped working, right? Because it got busted.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So all they had was the tanks. How would that, I mean, I don't know how these things work, but how would that tank alone create all the snow if it wasn't hooked up to the truck? I don't know, whatever. It's science that I'm not familiar with, so I'm not even going to bother.
I call it movie magic.
That's really what it was. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't understand exactly if anything like that actually exists. I don't even know if there's, like, actually snow make... I mean, I know there's, like, AC units and freezers stuff. I mean, obviously, but a machine...
They do have them because I used to work at this daycare, you know, place, and they had a snow day, mm-hmm. and they literally brought a truck, and the truck created the snow. And, like, so we had, like, the entire little playground that these kids used to play in, covered in, like, fake snow. It was just, like, ice, you know? And so they were in there playing, like, throwing snowballs at each other and shit. But, like, they do have snowmaking trucks, snowmaking machines, you know? That exists. But, like, they're hooked up to the truck. They're hooked up to something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they create the snow.
Do you have any final impressions on this movie as far as anything you can think of?
I mean, I liked it. I thought it was cool. Very 80s for sure. It was a very typical, like, oh, like, don't trust the bad boy in town type of thing. Like, so I already knew what to expect, but it was fun to watch for sure. Yeah,
I think so. And if you haven't watched this movie, I recommend, if you like schlocky 80s movies, just, you know, just watch this because it's pretty well done, I think.
Yeah.
Like I said, the special effects are pretty cool for their time. The green screen looks a little dated, but I mean, what are you going to do with a 35-year-old movie? I mean, and in general, it's a fun movie, and it's maybe like about an hour and a half long, so, you know, it's just typical rainy day, popcorn flick, you know. And so we have our category or our units for tonight, my friend, which I couldn't really think of anything that was too creative, so I just label this as, how many flesh-eating organisms does this movie get for you?
Nice. I'm going to go with the 5.
All right, I'm going to go with a 6.
Okay.
Because I think it's fair. I mean, as much as I like this movie, I can't give it super high rating because I like it or nostalgia or whatever. I mean, it does have its flaws, of course. Not even anything having to do with the time period. It's just, you know, the acting itself isn't that great sometimes. The lines were being delivered, like, kind of stiff. Some of the stuff they do doesn't make any sense. I mean, so I think an average of 5.5 flesh-eating organisms is a fair score for this.
I agree. That's good. That's a good score.
All right, so that was our critique segment, and we'll be right back with the academic segment in which we will learn about slime molds.
Whoa.
Stick around. Okay, Keanu Reeves.
Wow.
Stoner Chicks. We're four friends who met through comedy and bonded through weed. I'm Grace Penzel.
I'm Kayla Teal.
I'm Stephanie Thompson.
I'm Phoebe Richards.
If you love smoking weed and laughing with your friends, this podcast is for you.
Weekly episodes will drop on Fridays starting April 2nd. So subscribe now to Stoner Chicks wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming to your favorite podcatcher soon.
All right, everybody, we are back with our academic segment. And like I mentioned a little bit earlier, we are going to be discussing slime molds. And what we do in this segment, if you are a first-time listener, is that we kind of connect the topic or whatever is going on in the movie or story or whatever it is we're doing with something from quote-unquote real life. What we're going to talk about today is slime molds. And have you seen slime molds? Do you know what they are?
No. Wait. Slime molds?
Yeah.
Are those the little things that come in a cup and you, like, play with them?
Well, that might be, like, the toy version of it, but slime molds are actually an organism that exists in nature.
Okay, then no.
You've never seen, like, an old tree log and it looks kind of slimy or, like, gooey?
Not in the valley. We don't have woods, so no, that's not something I've ever seen.
We have a whole bunch of grass and no mountains and no trees or anything.
It is flat, and we have weeds, and that's it, really. It's not much.
We have our native tree, the mesquite tree.
We do, which I tried to extract honey from because I didn't know what that was, and that didn't work out for me, but, you know, I tried, so.
Well,
A for effort, yeah.
Yes, gold star. Gold star with you, my friend, on the mesquite honey extraction adventure. Okay, so slime molds are not classified as plants or animals. They used to be classified as like a fungus. But lately, maybe like in the past 10, 15, 20 years, whatever, scientists have determined that it's not a fungus either. It's actually more like an amoeba. You know, amoebas, like the microscopic little things?
Yes.
That supposedly can make you sick sometimes, depending which one it is, I guess.
I remember thinking amoebas are bad in biology class.
These organisms are brainless. They have no brain. And I'll come back to that in a moment when we talk more about this. But yeah, they have no brain. They have no nervous system because it's just a large single-celled organism, if that makes sense, or a collection of single-celled organisms that kind of forms a slime or a mold. And they come in every color of the rainbow. Except apparently for green, because they don't produce chlorophyll, which is the chemical, I guess, that gives plants their green color. So they look kind of greenish, but not green like a plant would. You know, it's maybe like a yellow-green or something like that. And they can form strange and sophisticated shapes, mind you. They can resemble honeycombs, they can resemble blackberries, or there's one that they affectionately called a dog vomit slime mold.
Ew.
Because apparently it looks like dog vomit. I've never seen that, but I mean, whatever.
Well, I mean, at least they're adaptable imposters. That's cool.
And when they form a mass, because they again, tend to be single-celled organisms, but when they get together, they form a mass. And it can grow as big as anywhere from 10 to 13 feet in length.
Okay.
So that's pretty... and by the way, I got all this information from PBS.org.
I love PBS.
So we can trust that. I haven't seen PBS in a long time, dude. I don't know what happened to the station here.
It's the best. I don't know what happened either. I think they just, like, shut it down or something.
Probably. It's a shame, by the way.
Yeah.
And, well, according to PBS.org, there are close to 900 species of slime mold, so I'm not gonna try to name all of them, because that would never end. And they're pretty much found on every continent, dude. Like, even in apparently the coldest one, which is Antarctica.
Damn.
They are particularly fond of forests and trees, and they eat rotting vegetation. They eat bacteria, actually.
Okay.
They eat yeast, which is, I guess, another form of bacteria or bacterial growth. And mm-hmm. they also eat various types of fungus.
Okay.
So, like I said earlier, they tend to stick to themselves for the most part, but if they start getting hungry and they need food and they need strength in numbers, they get together and they form a massive blob, if you will.
An alliance.
Mm-hmm. An alliance in blobby form. So what happens is they start moving around, they start looking for food, and I don't know how they detect it. I couldn't see that in this article. I don't know how it is they detect, like, if they have a sense of smell, or how do they determine
feel, yeah. mm-hmm.
where the food source is, because they did some experiments, dude, and this is a cool part that I had never heard of these things. Basically, what they do is, again, they detect food, and they start moving, and when they get to a place where they figured, like, you know, that they can continue their life cycle, what happens is they release spores. Mm-hmm. Right, the spores that get released into the wind, and they are carried, and they produce new slime mold creature thingies.
Wow.
So, going back to the experience, what they did is this. They had a map of, I believe, Canada, right? The Canadian country, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, of course, in the map, you have the cities. The major cities, right? Like, as like little dots and labeled, you know, Alberta or Quebec or whatever the cities were. And then they put a glass container of in which they had this slime mold thing. But what they mm-hmm. did is on every major city, like whenever in every spot on the map that corresponded to a major city, what they did was they put a food source there. They released the slime molds into this container, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what they did was pretty cool, because what they started doing is they started moving to look for the food, and it kind of almost resembled the way the highway system was drawn in the map. Mind you, this was a map that didn't have any highway systems drawn into it. It was just like a map, like a blank yeah. map, right? So it wasn't like they were mimicking the lines behind them or something like that. It was just natural. So what they discovered, that these things can find the shortest distance I guess between two points.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the way that we as a society would draw or build a highway. Yeah, because you don't want to build a highway that's like more long than what you need it to be.
Yeah.
Because it's going to save you in time and money and materials and stuff like that. So
exactly.
So this thing, you know, kind of mimicked, not exactly, but fairly accurately, the highway system of the Canadian, you know, mm-hmm. transit authority, whatever. And they did another experiment also in Japan, in which they did subway lines. So they did something similar. So I don't know what city it was. I think it might have been Tokyo, probably.
Mm.
Each subway station was marked as a dot, whatever. And they had also food sources, you know, whatever they eat. In each little dot that corresponded to a train station. And this thing started moving. And again, it kind of recreated the subway lines almost like perfectly. It's creepy, dude. What do you think?
It is creepy. That's insane. Like, it kind of reminds me of like a nervous system, you know, like I don't know. That's intense though.
Do you think something like this could learn anything?
Yeah, obviously. Like, I mean, it's a living organism. Like, if it's adapting, you know, to its surroundings and its environment. So yeah, I feel like it would be able to learn.
So what if I told you, my friend, I feel like Morpheus here. What if I told you that they actually did some experiments to conclude whether or not these things can quote-unquote learn.
I would believe it.
Okay, so, well, before we ask you or we talk about that, I need to ask you a question. What do you think it means to learn something?
To absorb, like, the information, the knowledge of, like, let's say, my brain's not working, but.
Speaking of brains.
Let's say, you know, I'm planted in your home, right? Learning would be learning how you work, how your whoever you live with works, and then adapting to that, and then adjusting my lifestyle to how you guys work, and then improving from that.
All right, that's a pretty legit definition there.
Okay.
okay, well, yeah, but and that is, I think, would be one definition of learning. You kind of put yourself in a place or situation in which you're not familiar with. Mm-hmm. You observe how things are done or how things happen in that place, and then you modify your behavior accordingly. So, yeah, I mean, that's one kind of learning.
Mm-hmm.
There's the one that I'm going to talk about right now, though, it's going to be a little bit more in-depth, like more scientific, in which is like the neurological learning, quote-unquote.
Okay.
And neurological is just a big word for brain-related.
Yes.
So it's got to do with your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And these things, like I mentioned in the beginning, have no brain. They don't have brains. They don't have neurons. They don't have any nervous system to speak of.
Okay.
And yet, what they learn by observing these things is that a lady by the name... I'm going to, by the way, show off my French skills in this one. a lady by the name of Audrey de Sauteur.
Wow.
She is a team leader at the Université Paul Sabatier in Toulouse, France.
Okay. Something university, that's what I got from all that.
So in plain English, she's a lead team researcher in a university in France. The university that's called Paul Sabatier. That would be the right pronunciation for that. I'm just throwing off here. Sorry, guys. Monica is not amused.
He's being a little pompous right now, but it's okay.
I'm drinking my beer with my pinky sticking out right now.
Doesn't get to do this very often, so it's fine.
Yes, I feel vindicated. Thank you, my friend. So what they did is they put a container of slime mold and they separated it because, like everything else, there's things that they're not a fan of.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the species that you're talking about, some of them don't like caffeine, some of them don't like salt, some of them don't like certain chemicals, right?
Okay.
So they put, like, I guess a petri dish of these things that's growing, and then they put, like, a block of salt in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
And next to the block of salt, they put a food source. So I guess they eat, like, sugar or candy, whatever it is they eat.
Okay.
And this thing, you know, it was hungry, so and it doesn't like salt. So it started to, like... Well, I guess, you know, it kind of held off as long as it could, and then started kind of venturing off into the salt, and kind of like, okay, eventually, it found the shortest way to get around the salt without having to touch it too much.
Mm-hmm.
And it get to the food source and eat, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that they started doing, and then eventually they kind of just started doing it, like, you know, like, they didn't hold off, because, oh, I hate salt, I don't want to be around, they kind of just went on top of it, and whatever, you know, I don't care, I'm hungry.
Yeah. Right?
So it's kind of like, for example, putting a person in a room and connecting that room to a cafeteria with a tunnel that secretes like sewer gas.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, mm-hmm. It's gonna be unpleasant for you to walk through the, you know, the smell of shit.
But you need to eat, so.
You're gonna eat, and at first you're gonna be like, yeah. Oh, whatever, and you're gonna try to just like, you know, whatever, and then eventually you're gonna get so hungry that, you know what, I'm just gonna run and whatever, I don't care. Like, I'm hungry.
And then you're gonna get used to it, and you're not even gonna care. You're not even gonna smell it, because mm-hmm. You're just trying to get your food. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what this thing was doing. It just learned how to do that and just adapted to it. And another thing they do is they actually share learning with each other. So if you teach a colony of slime or a group of slime mold something, like in this case that how to, you know, tolerate salt, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually separate a piece of that colony or that group and put it in another group, and that group that was not exposed to that situation will learn how to do the same thing.
Wow.
So it's kind of like osmosis transfer of knowledge there.
Yeah.
Just by I guess it would amount to maybe putting a person in one, like in a place like that, and then you put that person in a different group, and that person tells them, hey, dude, this is how you do this, you know, this is how you get around that.
Yeah.
Except, again, these things have no brain, they don't speak to each other. I mean, as far as we know, they have no speech.
That's, you know, so funny. Yeah.
So they can just share knowledge with each other like that just by contact.
Wow.
Do you think that's scary?
Maybe it would be less scary if I knew that these things had brains, but if they don't, then it's like, what the fuck? Like, how, by touch, that's how they're communicating all this information? Like, that is scary. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, too, but it is scary also.
So, this has kind of caused some sort of debate in the academic community, my friend, because in the case of Ms. Audrey de Sautour, she's a biologist, right?
Okay.
So scientists from the neuropsychology or neuroscience department don't agree with, because she says, yeah, these things are learning. They're learning to get, like they're learning how to get around obstacles, they're learning things, you know. And of course people that study the brain are like, how can anything learn if there's no brain? Like, that doesn't make sense. So yeah, there's kind of a not a fierce debate, mind you, but kind of like a, I guess they have professional differences, let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
Because the neuroscientists, going back to that word again, is brain related, so they determine these things don't have neurons, they don't have brains. You need a neuron system or a neurological system to learn something, and you need a brain to process that information.
Right.
So these things don't have it, so they're not learning. Like, it doesn't make sense. And so that's kind of like where they're at right now. They're kind of shooting back and forth what they think constitutes learning. So what do you think?
I mean, we can't really shoot anything down, dude, because we don't even know what's out there. Like, just because we've only been conditioned to know, or we've only learned that things have to have a brain for it to work or for it to function the way that, you know, we think they're supposed to, doesn't mean that there aren't other things out there that work differently. Like, we don't know what else is out there in the world, like in the universe, in the space or whatever, you know? So, I don't know. I mean, I think that we have a lot to learn, obviously. And that's one thing. It completely defeats everything that we ever were taught and everything we've learned from, you know, up to now. I don't think that we can apply the same rules to every single thing that we find, because we don't really know how they work or where they come from or whatever.
I guess because in this case, that whole theory of you need a brain and neurons to learn is true for the most part, but in this case it seems like
it's obviously not. Yeah.
So their main issue is that, well, yeah, these things are adapting their behavior, but we can't tell that we can't say that they're learning. You gotta find a different word for that. So it's like, okay, like
they're morphing, they're adapting, they're like, I mean, what else can, what other word can you use?
As long as you don't use learning.
Yeah, it's literally adaptation. That's what it is. Like, they're just adapting to their surroundings and to what's being presented to them. Like, that's literally all it is.
Yeah, and to me, the important thing is, like I mentioned a little earlier, when they take a piece of a slime mold and they blend it or connect it to another one, that other colony that was not expected or exposed, rather, to that situation knows how to do the same thing.
Yeah.
It learns by touch. That's weird, dude.
That is weird. That's crazy. That's wild. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little bit too much for me right now.
Yeah, it really is. I'm not in the right space to process all this information.
I'm only one brain and like my head's already spinning with all this.
I have one brain cell working right now at full power. So yeah, no.
All right, my friend. Do you have any final impressions on slime molds before we move on?
I hope I never meet one. That's all I have to say.
Well, they're all over the world, my friend. I already told you, so be careful.
Well, I hope I never see one.
When you go in one of your bike rides or one of those hikes you take, I mean.
I hope I never encounter one. I'm just going to put that out there. Let's not make this happen. I don't want it. I'm not ready for it. I don't need it. So, no. No, thank you.
Yeah, like hashtag say no to slime molds.
Right.
Well, I mean, for the most part, they keep to themselves. I mean, they don't really invade any human environments. They don't like to be around anything that will, they perceive as a threat, I guess. So they kind of stick to the trees and the soil, you know?
They're antisocial, like me. Yay.
Yeah, so you got more in common with them than you might think, my friend. There you go.
I guess so.
They like food. I mean,
I love food.
There okay. you go.
Maybe we could be best friends, you know? Who knows?
All right. So that was our academic segment on slime molds and whether or not they are capable of learning. So whatever you guys think, do let us know. Email us, comments, whatever it is you feel is your opinion on this. By all means, do let us know. So we'll be right back with the Know Thine Enemy segment after these messages. Send us money.
Hey there, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Agnes.
And together, we are Sass and Sips, a watch, rewatch podcast.
We want to personally invite you to check out our podcast, where we'll be discussing TV shows from two perspectives.
One who has seen the show before.
And one who's not so sure. While we drink a lot. I mean, like a lot.
Every season, we will focus on a new show. And for our first season, we have chosen the iconic show, Lost.
We hope that you will come over and check us out.
We can be found on your favorite podcast platform or at sassandsips.com. If you're down for drinks, friends, and television, then make sure you listen and subscribe.
Because we're down for all of it.
Yes. Woo-hoo. So listen with your bestie, open your favorite bottle, and sip and sass with Sass and Sips.
All right, so we are now at the Know Thine Enemy segment. And if you happen to be a first-time listener, shame on you. No, just kidding. But the Know Thine Enemy segment is the one in which we go a little bit more in depth with the villain or antagonist or whatever you might want to call the rival of the protagonists in the movie or show or whatever the topic is at any given episode. So the blob, my friend, this would be the enemy for the movie, right?
Yep.
Quite obviously. I mean, you do have some scientists that act a little bit shady.
Yes. I forgot what his name was, but that one dude who was like at first saying like, oh, we need your information, and then he was like, get rid of them. I don't remember what his name was, but fuck that guy. And he just set the whole idea of like, never trust the government because they always have ulterior motives. So for all those conspiracy theorists out there, this completely supports their ideas.
This movie is your jam.
Yeah, for sure.
We're going to talk about both in a little bit, but I would want to say that me personally, I think that the blob is the main enemy, but in conjunction with evil scientists or whatever these guys are.
Yes.
So the blob, I spoke to some scientists at the Las Milpas Institute of Technology here.
Wow.
Close to my house. that's not a real place, actually. It's just, you know. I live close to an area called Las Milpas, and it's kind of like a rundown area, but I mean, anyways.
I was like, there's scientists in Las Milpas? Okay, cool.
Yeah, no. Not that I know of, at least. But yeah, so this, I developed a system of classification for villains, and this one would fall under science and tech-based, and it's not alien, because you are given the impression this is an alien organism, because it falls from the sky in a meteor.
Yes.
But you find out eventually through these evil scientists from the government that they sent bacteria and viruses to space to kind of study their behavior or how they would react, whatever. And it turns out they mutated into this thing.
Yeah, and man-made.
Man-made. The mutation apparently caused the satellite to crash. And I want to say that maybe space radiation is the reason why this thing mutated. I mean, I've never been to space, obviously, but I've read that. I mean, yeah, I just went last week and dude, you know.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's pretty crazy out there.
I didn't take any selfies because, you know, I'm, you know.
I didn't want to mutate, so, yeah.
So, yeah, apparently there's a lot of radiation up there, and since you don't have the protection of the atmosphere anymore, then you would be exposed to all that if you don't have a suit also. But, right. Yeah, I want to say that maybe that was the reason why this thing mutated in space. And, like I said, that mutation apparently caused it to grow in size, which in turn resulted in the satellite crashing, and then this whole movie started taking place.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say the goal or the motivation of the blob is?
To take over the world. Duh.
By eating it.
By absorbing.
By absorbing it, yes.
Yeah, it's absorbing things. It's not really eating things, it's just absorbing them.
That is correct. It's assimilating them, or kind of just...
Yeah.
And in turn, getting bigger with every victim that it eats.
Exactly. And, obviously, firepower makes it worse. It makes it grow even bigger, because it's more heat that it's consuming, so it's expanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I guess the goal of the scientists is to use this as a bioweapon. They mentioned that at some point.
Yes, it's a war. It's biological warfare, is what they said. It was mm-hmm. war. Mm-hmm.
And time for some political thing here. And that's not a political thing. This is like history more than anything.
Yeah.
This movie was made in the 80s, and the Cold War wasn't quite over yet.
Mm-hmm. So they were like, well, maybe we can use this against the Russians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, as far as I know, in my history knowledge, the Cold War ended in the 90s with the collapse of the Soviet Union,
mm-hmm.
which eventually became Russia and all separate states, and that's just me, like, superficial knowledge. I'm not an expert or anything, but...
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, there was still that kind of, like, subconscious fear of the outsider, the, you know, the enemy or whatever, so we gotta find a way to destroy them.
Right.
Right, and... Like you mentioned, this creature or being, whatever it is, assimilates its prey to expand its size.
Uh-huh.
And what is its main weakness?
Cold. It hates the cold, quoted from whatever name the girl was.
From Shawnee Smith, babe.
Sure. The teenager with the weird hair, yes.
Well, yeah, cold. Apparently, fire extinguishers also, because they have like a cold gas in them.
They have CO2. Was it CO2?
I think it is, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And fire extinguishers, I think they use CO2. And also, I think my major weakness is the guy's mullet.
Yeah, I agree. Intensely afraid of it, for sure.
It hates the mullet, my friend. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is your opinion of this thing? As a villain, as a creature, like, would you be scared of something like this?
Hell yeah, dude. Like, the thing, it just basically almost disintegrates things. If I saw a giant blob rolling down my street, absorbing people, I would freak the fuck out. What would I do if I didn't know that the cold was its weakness? I would be screwed. You can never be safe, because the thing infiltrates through like cracks in buildings, or like through the sewage systems, through your pipes. Like, you cannot escape it. Like, if it wants you dead, it will make you dead. That thing is scary as hell.
I agree with you. This thing is kind of a formidable opponent. And yeah, like, unless you find out that the weakness of this thing is cold, then you really have no way of fighting it, because you mentioned, I mean, if you try to burn it, it just grows more.
Yeah, fire doesn't work. It's only cold. So, like, I mean, how many people have fire extinguishers in their homes? I don't have one. Even if you did have one, if it's that big to where it's, like, you know, enveloping homes, you have no chance against that thing with one fire extinguisher. Like, and what are you going to do? Like, throw ice at it? It's not like everybody has, like, a freaking, like, deep freezer that they will, like, are willing to stay in there, you know, and hope that they don't die by the time this thing is done with, or, like, a hold storage unit. How would you even fight it, you know? If you didn't have that snow machine that guy had conveniently located in his garage, how would you even get rid of it? You wouldn't. You know, you would be mm-hmm. screwed. You would die, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, gunfire does nothing to it. I mean...
No! You can't blow it up. You can't, like, throw grenades at it. Like, it would just make it worse. It would just agitate it.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people have the idea, well, fire kills everything. I mean, that would be my natural response. I would try to burn it.
Same. First yeah, but it wouldn't work.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. that would probably result in me getting absorbed by this thing.
Yeah, same.
So, yeah, like I don't have an extinguisher myself in my house. I don't have anything. Like, mm-mm. I don't even think I have a first aid kit.
I have one of those. I just don't have a fire extinguisher.
I gotta put something together, dude, just in case. You never know. I mean, like, I might need some Band-Aids or some...
If they exist, you know... As you said, that there are organisms similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we probably should be prepared.
Yes. And as far as it being like a man-made government cover-up, what do you feel about that?
I believe it. I feel like that's something that could probably happen. I mean, they told us aliens weren't real for the longest time, and now they accept it. So... You know, you can't really trust anything, really. You know, anything is possible. Anything is possible.
I think so. I think it's important to maybe try to keep an open mind, like within reason, of course.
Yeah.
But me personally, I believe there are things that we don't know about that they know about.
Mm-hmm.
Case in point, the aliens, because like you said, they accepted that, yeah, we don't know what these are, and they're probably aliens.
And that's the thing, though. It's because... I mean, from what I've learned, is like, oh, they didn't release information like that to the public because they thought that the public was going to go crazy and, like, freak out, you know? They don't trust that we can handle that type of information. So if our government already thinks that, what else are they keeping from us? Because, yeah, the majority of people would freak out. And then there's other people who've already experienced this shit and are like, oh yeah, I already knew that we're there. Like, who cares? Dude, we live in a freaking planet. Like, there are other planets in our universe. How could there not be aliens? You really think that we're the only people who exist in this world, in this universe? Space is enormous.
Yeah.
We don't even know how fucking big it is. Like, how far it goes. Not even the ocean. In our own planet, how can people not believe that there are other beings, other life forms that exist? Like, obviously there are, dude.
Yeah.
There have to be. Like, we can't be we're not that important, you know? We're not the only people, we're not the only beings in this universe. Like, there has to be other life forms, for sure.
I agree with you, I think there are.
Yeah, so like, obviously, there's a possibility that in some other planet, there is a blob. Community, you know, that like could easily take over a planet. Like, why not, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to touch up on that real quick, I mean, I don't very easily follow conspiracy theories. I mean, I read some of them sometimes just kind of to keep myself informed, but I don't really follow any of them like in detail or closely. But I mean, I agree with you that I do think there have to be aliens. There just have to be, like, the statistics alone, like, there has to be a chance, a percentage chance, whatever. Whether that number is high or low, I mean, it depends on who you ask.
Right.
But, I mean, I do think that there are other creatures in other planets, in other galaxies, whatever. Whether or not we're ever going to get to see them, that's the question now, to me, personally.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that we will develop that technology anytime soon. I mean, as far as, like, time travel, or not time travel, but, like, travel to space, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're gonna get to see that in our lifetimes, sadly.
Not only that, but like, dude, if somebody's literally watching us from their little spaceship or whatever, like, why would they want to come down here?
Yeah.
Like, you know, for all we know, somebody already thought about coming over here, but then they saw what was going on. We're like, oh, never mind. Let's go back.
Bye, Felicia.
Yeah, no, never mind. Like, things are too complicated down there. We don't want to... Let's just go.
I want to think that planet Earth is, like, the outcast of the universe high school.
I wouldn't be surprised if we were an outcast to the rest of the universe. Like, it makes complete sense to me. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, dude. I mean, and just case in point, just a couple of weeks ago when they had or last week, I think it was, when they reported here locally in my area.
Yeah.
About the gas shortage. Dude, people got in line and there was like literally lines that extended for blocks to get gas because people thought the gas was going to run out. I had to put gas in my car and I had enough to make it back to work, you know, for a day or two after that. When I heard about the gas panic, I was like, man, I got to fill up my tank because people are going to go crazy. And so on the way home, every gas station that I saw had huge lines, dude, like ridiculous.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, whatever. I mean, I'll make it. And if I run out of gas, and I'll just call an Uber or whatever the next day or something. Dude, like by the next day, nada, nothing. No lines.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember, but this happened a few years ago, too, because some reporter from some news network in the area in Texas or whatever had reported they had gotten information from some guy or from some, like, company or whatever who supposedly looks at these things. And they said that we were going to have a gas shortage. People started sharing that information everywhere, Facebook, like, WhatsApp. I got a text from my mom saying, hey, you should probably, like, fill up your gas tank because they're saying that this thing happened in this one freaking, like, oil rig place and we're not going to get oil or whatever. The place where this happened at was not where our state gets their oil supply, their gasoline supply. But because that information was shared by that reporter and then by social media, because everyone has Facebook, everyone has WhatsApp, everyone has Instagram. There were people lined up at every single gas station creating the gas shortage themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I went because I was like, I know how people here are. They're going to create it no matter what. Let me go put some gas in my car because I was at half a tank. I was like, I don't want to end up without gas. And I got it right before things got crazy. And then I was like, let me go get some chips, right? And when I was driving to the gas station, the lines were like all around the freaking corner. It was ridiculous. And within days, there was no more freaking gas in the valley. In the entire Rio Grande Valley.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, like these people created the shortage themselves. Mm-hmm. It was never going to happen.
I mean, I'm glad you settled that because that kind of proves the point that people aren't ready for information, dude.
They're not, dude. They're not. That's why they didn't say anything about, like, all the technology that we have because people can't handle it. Because if you tell them, they're going to freak out. There's people who don't understand the way shit works, and their first reaction is to just like, panic. Straight up. That's what they're going to do. Like, mm-hmm. Because they don't understand it. People are going to freak out over things that they don't understand. It's just like human nature. And there's some people who will not go out of their way to look things up, to research things, and to figure out what it is that's going on and why things are happening the way they're happening. Like, not everybody has that as an instinct.
Yeah.
They're either too lazy to try to find the reasoning behind things, or they just don't want to, and they just want to automatically create chaos. Like, that's just the way things are, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And, well, just to come full circle here, this ties in with the movie because at one point we mentioned that they say, oh, you know, we'll just tell the people that it's a bacteria and, you know, a biological hazard.
Yeah. Anything serious. Yeah.
So that's how that whole thing ties in with this movie. So, well, how many skulls does the blob get on the scare meter from you, my friend?
For me, I'm going to go with the 7 just because, like, it is pretty scary. I mean, it, like, literally eats up bones, like, mm-hmm. acid, you know? That's pretty fucking scary. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the 7. I mean, obviously, in the movie, it didn't look as scary. It just looked very comical, which is why I'm giving it a 7.
But the concept of the blob.
Yes.
I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to go with the 7, too.
Okay.
For the same reasons, because, I mean, it looks kind of, like, goofy sometimes, whatever, but...
Yeah.
And once you figure out its weakness, you can just get rid of it like nothing. I mean, just get a truck of nitrogen or something, kind of like in Terminator, and just freeze it, and then just hasta la vista, baby.
Yep. I mean, you know what the question is, though? Where did they store all of it? Because they mentioned something about putting it in an ice box or, like, an ice facility or something, but, like...
probably the school cafeteria or something.
What would happen if the light, if the power went out and everything melted?
Chan, chan, chan. That's a question for the sequel that never happened, probably.
Right. That's a lot of material to put away, dude. For real.
So that was our Know Thy Enemy segment in which we talked about the blob and the Russian collapse and the aliens. And so it's quite a trip. Quite a trip in this segment. We normally don't do this, but I mean, whatever. You know, it's we're both not sober anymore. And yeah, you know, it's all good.
Yeah.
So we'll come right back with the worst possible segment in podcast history, which is the closing remarks. And we'll be right back. Monica, the audience, and myself, we are at the sad face for today because we are at the ending of our podcast episode. That is the worst thing that ever happens in our lives, but you know, all great things come to an end. And
it is what it is.
Yeah, you know, but you can always come back for more or browse through our library of past episodes. I mean, it's up to you guys. So I want to thank everyone that's listened in to tonight's episode. If you are a repeat listener, thank you very much for being part of the EMBL squad. And if you're a first-time listener, we hope, like we mentioned, that you come back for more, or you can maybe go back to our past episodes and find something you might like in there. So, Monica, do you have any shout-outs tonight?
Yes. To those people who commented on our about our podcast. Dude, so Chewy sent me some like a screenshot or like some pictures of some comments that we got. Was it on Letterboxd or?
It was on Apple Podcasts.
On Apple Podcasts, and we had a couple of people who like wrote some super nice things about us. And honestly, I almost cried. Like I felt so proud that people actually liked the stuff that we're putting out, and it was really motivating, and I really appreciate it. So shout out to all those people who did that. I don't know the names off like right off the bat, like from my head, but you know who you are. You know, if you commented, you know who you are. So thank you for that. It really like motivates us to keep doing what we're doing. And it's really like awesome to know that people are actually listening and like what we're doing and the format that we have and all that. So thank you guys for that.
Yay, thank you, Monica.
You're welcome.
And yes, if you want to be cool like these people, go ahead and by all means leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We're also on Podchaser, by the way. Podchaser is another little place where you can listen to our podcast. You can also leave a review for either an individual episode or for the podcast as a whole, whatever you prefer. But yeah, that's awesome, dude. I when I saw that, I was like, yes, you know, like I was happy. I was really like, you know, that kind of that kind of made my day. I'm not being like, you know, cynical or anything. It actually made me feel really good about what we're doing, and it's like awesome, dude. Like it's cool because I think we found a format that works and people are enjoying. So
yeah,
we're gonna keep doing this for as long as we feel like.
Yeah.
Hopefully, man. Hopefully. And my shout-outs are going to be one for Mr. 20 Tim Minutes. It's a podcaster also. He sent us some really awesome swag. I don't know. I think you saw a picture of me wearing a hat.
Yes,
that
I did.
Because what happened with that is, it's a long story. A while back, he did like a giveaway in his Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And we happened to have won that giveaway. And I never received the things. And I was like, well, I didn't want to be like rude and ask him, hey, what's up, dude? Like, you know, where's my stuff? And I kind of forgot about it, actually. Like, in all truth, I kind of just forgot about it. And then he posted something on his Twitter, and I was like, hey, like, I thought we were supposed to get something from him, right? And so I said, hey, dude, like, I'm sorry, do you know, what happened with this thing? He's like, oh, you know what? I think I sent it to the wrong guy.
Oh, but, wow.
Yeah, so he sent it to the wrong person. But, like, you know, now he sent it to us. So, I mean, I'm keeping the hat when it comes, sorry.
Okay.
But he also sent us some stickers, which you can get those. And he also sent us some football player cards, so you can keep those as well.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Well, maybe I'll buy you a hat from him, because he does have them for sale in his webpage.
Okay. Thing,
so I'll buy you a hat, my friend, to make up for my douchiness tonight.
Sounds good. I'll take that.
Yes. And also, well, you already thanked the awesome people that left us reviews on Apple Podcasts, but I also want to thank my friend Kim. She's been awesome lately, so thank you, Kim. You're awesome. She and I used to work together. I mean, she came in after you left.
Okay.
Yeah, she was there for a while, and then she ended up leaving to work somewhere else. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, but she's been posting stuff on Facebook, and I was just kind of going back and forth with her, because we kind of make fun of each other. It's kind of a thing. Our Facebook is under Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends, and our Instagram is under Myths Behind LGDS.
Our Twitter is Myths Behind LGDS, and you can also email us at mythsbehindlegends@gmail.com.
All right, our Letterboxd is under Myths Behind LGDS, and on there you can look at our watch list and maybe recommend a movie from there, or maybe give us an idea for including a certain movie on that list, and we can help you with that. And also our website, which is under myths-behind-legends.mailchimpsite.com. Okay, so our hint, Monica, for next week's episode, what is that going to be about?
Well, it's just a couple of teenagers who find out they have some really cool powers, and we watch them use them not always responsibly.
Chan-chan-chan. I think it's going to be a fun one.
Yeah.
I think it's a cult classic.
It definitely is.
So it's going to be a fun one for us. That was our episode for tonight. Once again, I want to thank everyone that's been listening in. If you are a repeat listener, please keep coming back for more. And yes, I want to wish everyone a great night, evening, morning. If you are running away from the blob, run faster. Don't.
Try to get some cold materials to throw at it.
Yeah, don't lock yourself in your house. Kind of just get some ice cold beer and just kind of, well, don't throw it at him. Just drink it.
Yeah. Pour it, or like, you know, throw some ice at it. Get a fire extinguisher, whatever you can find. Yeah.
Drink the cold beer, because then it will sense the cold inside your body. And like, oh, and then get away from that guy. Yes. So we'll see you on the next one. And until then, have a good one.
Bye.